Well, we should get started for the hackathon project reports.
Yeah.
Anatoly, are you online there?
Yes.
Okay. Just a couple of announcements. There will be an award for the best hackathon project. The judges are in attendance, and the selection of the award-winning hackathon project will be partly based on the presentations. So heads up for the presenters. Do your best, and the award will be presented at 3 o'clock in, I guess, what is the final session of today. By Michael Gunninger. So we'll start off with an overview by Anatoly Levenchuk, and then each project will have approximately 12 minutes or so, 12 to 15 minutes to review their presentation. I also wanted to mention that there, at the end of the day, the final session will end around 4, but we will have a birds of feather session from 4 to 5:30. Right now, we have one group that is committed to holding a session, and that's on establishing the FIBO content teams. So if anybody else wants to try to spontaneously start a bird of feather session, I suggest they maybe use the chat room to see if there's anybody else interested. The plan would be we'll hold the bird of feather sessions here in this room in just the different corners, and it'll be pretty informal. And we'll have to clear out by about 5:30, but that should be plenty of time. All right, so, Anatoly, let me bring up your slides and ask you to begin.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good morning. Our virtual real event of hackathon reporting started. And now it's evening in Moscow, and this is truly a worldwide event, like a hackathon per se. This is track E, hackathon results. Co-champions was Dan Brickley and Anatoly Levenchuk, and advisor was Ken Baklavsky. Slide 2, please. What happened? Happened 6 individual hackathon projects in a very diverse topic. And it was about 50 of people that have fun hacking ontologies, hacking codes, and hacking all the ontology engineering, big data, and many other things, artifacts. While focus was, of course, on ontology, and there was not too much link to big data and semantic linked data topics. But still, hackathon fit its purpose, tried to do something with hands, but not simply talking and hearing, like we do now, for example. Most of the project was planned to end in one day, but actually take 2 days, some of them 3 days to get results, and even more time it takes to form reports. It seems to me that reports today will be slightly more in term of results than it was 1 month ago. It seems to me this will not finish today because the work is going on in many of the projects that participated. Most of produced artifacts available and in individual project public repositories. In individual roster page of every in Purple Wiki in every of the projects, you can find URI of these repositories. And reports published, but what changed in this final report? You see today, even in slides, you see multiple diagrams and multiple glimpses of ontology artifacts. This is not only text, but code, ontology engineering artifacts, work in product. And then we will have six presentations, and you can list slides from three up to eight. And you can see on these slides individual names of the project, addresses of project roster page, how many participants, and a brief result. And please, slide 9. If you have any questions, you can still use Ontology Summit list or contact hackathon organizers, for example, me, or directly get in touch with the leader of every participant project. And see you on Ontology Summit hackathon next year. And now I am ready to suggest have individual presentations, and thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Anatoly. So, Victor, are you ready to make your presentation for the first hackathon project?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, and I'm bringing up the slides now in the room. And please start whenever you're ready.
Okay.
As you move to, when you want us to advance to the next slide, please say what slide we should go to or next slide or something.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, everyone, or good day. Okay, I will try to shortly describe this strange title of the hackathon and describe what we have tried and what we have achieved. The second slide, please. We are working, our company and our broad team are working on ontology-based integration of engineering data. And we are meeting many interesting problems in this work. And one of the problems is to find the common language for education, for discussions, for the domain we are working should be transparent both for engineers and to logicians. We have to find people who understand simultaneously such diverse concepts as models, equipment, and ID diagrams, and at the same time logic, sets, properties, inheritance. Few people know both domains, and even fewer of them can use the same terms for objects, which they probably share. And also, we have very big difficulties in finding good examples to organize discussions. Engineering data is always kept behind corporate firewalls. Ontology research is done in universities on and public examples are sometimes not a very serious ones. So we started to look for a non-industrial example, which will be comparable in complexity to engineering work, and at the same time, we will be able to discuss it and to look at it publicly and try our methods, our tools on such a set. Next slide, please. By the idea of Anatoly Levenchuk, who just spoke before you, we arrived to the to work on anime and manga data sets. Production of this cultural project we decided to consider as engineering process. It's very similar, really. Studios and distributions are enabling systems which work on complex systems of the creative products themselves, which are in their complexity and in the complexity of the teams around them are at least comparable to some engineering products. We can find many interesting analogies between engineering work and work on creative projects. And we also understand and we see that the data we are working with is also comparable in complexity, in multiple formats, and also we see the blurred border between structured and unstructured data. In engineering, we see the great interest to unstructured data and natural language processing. And so we think that this domain of can be a good example domain and can be developed, the projects in this area can be really developed even farther than we tried to do that. Next slide, please. Here you can see the examples of various data sets. Well, of course, we relied mostly on the internet, on the databases and available on the internet. There are many sites from the known International Movie Database to a great number of fan sites where people collect data about their favorite anime and manga, starting from the personages and teams who are working on that, and all the different naming and all the different languages in which the products are issued. So we had a very good collection of data sets, and some of them or all of them allow to download the dumps or allow Attest to Life APIs, which can work with on the various integration projects. Next slide, please. We have made initial plans. Initial plans were to prepare the state of reference data. Here I have to mention that we decided to work on the general ontology framework of the engineering ontology domain. Engineering ontology domain as it is envisioned in the standard ISO 15926. So we decided to work on the 4D extension ontology commitments. We tried to reuse as much as possible from the federated reference data libraries available for ISO 15926. And we decided to work with the methods which are developed and implemented in the framework of the community of this ISO standard. So we decided to work with templates, which are representation of NRE relations, probably not very common to the general ontology community, but developed in this specific engineering ontology community. We decided to take data sets and transform them to the semantic format, develop patterns, and try to integrate at least pieces of the data from various databases, various data sources. And we had plans to publish linked data as the result of the project and try to make some alternative integrated views on the data derived from the data sources. Next slide, please. The event itself took place on the 29th of March. We worked for 8 hours, and then we debugged and corrected our tools and our instruments for 3 more days. We had 9 participants overall and some guests who were visiting us and discussing our intermediate results. We have worked in only one tool environment, that's 15926 editor. It's a special tool developed by our company for the ontology integration project. And so we tested various methods, various instruments developed in this framework. And you can see the reference to our open project repository, where we now published all the initial data sets, reference data, code, adapters, patterns, everything which can be used and looked at. Next slide, please. The process that I have tried to describe was to access and study various APIs or XML exports for 2 final data sets, which allowed us good access to the data, to do modeling, to provide models for alternative identifications, names and internal database IDs, names in many languages. That's what the first study which we performed. And the second, we tried to model work division, the processes which connect title, team, and roles in these teams which are involved in the activity of production of anime or manga title. We decided on URI schema for the data we extracted from diverse databases. We developed reference data through which we described everything, and we developed set of patterns to describe native database models. On the screenshots, you can see part of our reference data library with classes to hold titles, to hold staffs, to hold activity types, various relations, and the sample of the pattern which describes a title from one of the databases with various alternative identifications and year of production. Next slide, please. Here we are showing some screenshots from our working environment with the results of the project. We have imported 8,000 titles from one database, almost 7,000 titles from another database, and you can see on the right side one of the products showing various types of alternative identifications. You can see that this fake NMM title had the main identification in English fake and has two identifications in languages, in different languages. Here you see Russian and some probably Arabic alternative identifications for this title. The next slide, please. We have also imported 2,500 various persons involved in the production of the titles. And you can see on the right side of the slide that we have modeled the activity which involves such a person or actually individual and involves in the production of the title in some specific role which he is playing in the production of this specific title. So these were really the results of the Thursday. We had not enough time to complete linked data representation of the results, so our linked data engine will be part of the new release of our editor. We had not completed integration of two data sources. We tried to do some identification of similar or identical titles, but this will require more code, more comparison of naming in various languages, which is an interesting task, but we had not enough time to complete it. One of the important for us results for us were, of course, debugging of our environment, software environment. We are developing to work with ontologies and specifically with engineering ontologies. And everyone, are welcome to test our environment. Everything is downloadable. You can change, augment, and even complete our project. And we will be ready to answer questions and to provide more information to those who are interested in this area, in the domain, in the tools, in what we are doing. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Victor. Are there any questions? Okay, great. We'll move on to the next hackathon project. Which will be presented by Mike Bennett here locally.
Hi, thanks. Me again. Okay, let's see if I can keep this one brief. This is another long, interesting hackathon. The challenge we had, I think, was I don't do programming, and a hackathon is like lots of hacky people doing really deep technical things. And how could we do a hackathon in the realm of meaning itself, as it were? That was kind of the challenge we set ourselves. So slide two, then. So I'll first start by describing who participated. We had quite a broad global spread. So we had Annette Hopper from France, Brand Neiman from the US, Jeff Brazel from the US, Max Gilmore down in Australia, myself, Mike Bennett, was in the US for most of that time, Mike Dean here in the US, Mirko Morandini in Italy, and Tatiana Polotayeva, who joined us from Russia on the second day. And Gary Bergcross, my co-conspirator in setting it up and getting the example data in place and so on. So our challenge then, what could we do as a hackathon that dealt with real meaning, and what would it look like? We decided we wanted to come up with something that would try and integrate and reuse ontologies across different kinds of concept. And so we chose the idea of risk as being something that requires you to integrate stuff from events, situations, statistics, incidents, and so on. And that would give us a chance to think about the semantic abstractions, to unify those, to look at ontology design patterns and so on, and look at all the issues around reuse, aiming towards a kind of notional application, although we didn't ever think we'd have time to do the actual application. We wanted our endpoint to be describing what a nice app might look like. Slide 4. That's just not moving on again. Come on. Not doing it. Ah, a mouse. Whoop, there we go. Fantastic. I got the little rolly bar thing. Okay, so on slide 4, I'm going to skip over slide 4 because it's really just a kind of digest of the rest of these slides. So I shall move quickly on to where we started, slide 5. So we started with a little brainstorming scoping session, how would we approach this, what area of risk would we look at, and so on. Brand Neiman came up with the insight that we should think of ontologies as a bottom-up thing from looking at example data, but we wanted to also think about how to reuse and conceptualize. So we actually did a bit of both. We did bottom-up from the data. We looked at a few example data sets to think about where we could get to articulate an ontology from, this is where we had a lot of available data on traffic and transport incidents and things. We did take a little detour and look at some drug trials and other things that had adverse effects. And interesting, the word adverse effect there was really very specific to drug trials. We even had a word with them, and they said, oh, well, we could make it more abstract and make it adverse medical effects generally. Still wasn't useful for adverse effects in delays in trains and things. So that was an interesting lesson in this sort of context of applications and so on. So we decided to go with travel adverse events as our focus and think about an application where you had to get from A to B and look at all the risks of that. So on slide 6, we then split up the work. So Mirko, well, I'll describe the ontologies on the next one, and I'll show who did these things as we go through it. So Mirko did the general risk terms, basically abstracting from some stuff he'd previously done on software risks. Annette did the bottom-up, very huge amount of work on deriving an ontology from example data sets. Mike Dean did an ontology for trip concepts. I'll talk more about that, how that extended some existing stuff. Max Gilmore did the ontology for event impacts, and Tatiana then came along and did further refinement on that impacts ontology later on. So we worked collaboratively, firstly through this little diagram, which was really moving and changing the whole time. It's not very readable on here, but we basically wanted a modular set of ontologies. We identified what content would be in each of them. You see there's a number of other ontologies we import, like trajectories. We had a common events pattern. That event C4DU down there was the event ontology design pattern that we wanted to use and extend both to describe risk events, and is actually also a basis for some of the trajectory stuff, although that's not shown there. And so we basically started with the idea of a general pattern of risk as being a product of probability and impact being against some kind of goal, in this case traveling and so on, and then worked out how to try and parcel out the work between those. That was on slide 7. So then slide 8 describes the ontologies themselves. I mentioned the risk concepts ontology, which imported the common events, also imported the 5-0 goals ontology because the impact of an event relates to some goal. We had the risk assessment, looking at the impact of things. The travel adverse events, this was the bottom-up ontologization of the sample data set, and then the trip ontology, which takes a trajectory ontology, which itself extends the event design pattern. We saw in one of the Track A presentations how that was further extended to talk about cruises and so on. So here it was extended to talk about the possible ways of getting from A to B. So our example use case of the person has to get from here in D.C. to Austin, Texas at 9 o'clock on a certain morning, what are the different ways they can get there? And so the trajectory thing went through those different routes, and then the different other ontologies described the risks and the impacts of those risks and so on. So slide 9, then the basic risk concepts ontology. Mirko Morandini took his open source software ontology and essentially generalized it from that very specific application to the more general concepts of the risk event, impact, the goal, as I mentioned, imported from FIBO, and so on. On slide 10, we had a specialized impact ontology that Max Gilmore worked on. Interesting innovation here that we described both loss and gain as possible impacts, i.e. possible outcomes of something, and so we're able to talk about not just negative risk, but when we look at other aspects, other business areas like finance and so on, one person's loss is another person's gain. So that's some of the thinking that's coming out of the finance community at the moment, which wanted to reapply here, and the different ways you could mitigate risks and so on. And you'll see that the same common concepts are reappearing in each of these ontologies based around the common event pattern. Slide 11, this is obviously not intended to be read at this level. This is just a tiny part of Annette's bottom-up ontology of the data that was in the travel adverse events. And one of the things we realized later was that as we look at the nature of risks, we need to be able to roll up some of these. So she created this very deep taxonomy. There's several more layers over on the right there that aren't in this diagram that describe all the things that could happen on trains, planes, and automobiles. Slide 12, then, this is the external trajectory ontology. This was the building blocks from which we then extended. This is what Mike Dean created, extended to create the trip ontology. So everything in trip that describes how you got from A to B was built using the building blocks of this semantic trajectory, which shows how some item, in this case me, moves from one place to another within some physical space. So each of these ontologies, the trip ontology itself, I should mention all of these others, we ingested them into a visual ontology modeler tool in order to get a good look at them. In fact, this first one we actually firstly created in the visual tool, but then it got overwritten as due to an issue with the tool, and so this was actually created in Protégé and imported again. So all of these were done in Protégé and imported into this modeler so we could all see what each other's ontologies look like. I don't have diagrams for the trip one, unfortunately, but it contains the different ways you could get from A to B for this example and a number of individuals like stations and so on, which are then to be moved to another application ontology. So we're starting to see how this would look as the final product if you were going to productize this. Slide 14 then. So we basically, to summarize the activities, the different ontologies were created in Protégé, imported into this visual ontology modeler tool in order to get a look at what it looks like. We're neither endorsing nor critiquing the tool here. We're simply showing what sorts of things tools can do in the hopes that that opens up some of the conversations on that. The different ontologies were all created in different syntaxes of OWL, N3, Turtle, and so on. And the idea was to have an overall integrating ontology which would pull all those together. As I say, the travel adverse events one was created bottom-up from the data itself. Slide 15. So we reached an end point where there was a couple of things left to do that were tedious but simple. So integrating all of those concepts into a single ontology, perhaps if we were to do it again, we would redispose more of those concepts in different ontologies. In the trip ontology, we realized that there were things we could think about in terms of risk that weren't yet reflected in the travel adverse events ontology, so there's a bit of rolling up to be done there. So that's kind of other work that would be done if we were to continue it. But I think we reached the point where we showed what such an integrated ontology would look like. Slide 16. So then a couple of interesting observations along the way about reuse and so on. Some of the ontologies have a very generalized domain and range for properties, you know, thing to thing and so on. which makes perfect sense when you look at how that individual ontology is developed. But if you're developing for reuse, you might want to say more about the intended meaning of those properties so we would know how and when to reuse them. The tooling we found, visual tooling is very helpful in getting an integrated team to understand what they're looking at. What there wasn't was integrated tooling for having a set of different ontologies with relationships between them and understanding the imports, even being able to move concepts around from one ontology to another, that kind of development tooling. The tooling we had was very good for stable published ontologies on the web with the disciplines that those required, but you need a bit of indiscipline when you're trying to throw it all together. So that was an interesting lesson. Finally, the trajectory ontology, we recognized at the end that it was actually usable beyond just travel, that it would have a lot of applications in logistics and so on. And perhaps with a bit of imagination and more abstraction again, financial cash flows are very analogous to the kind of trajectory issues we're looking at. So actually, we're closer than we thought to being able to do a kind of financial risk application as well. So that's really it. I'm over time, but those are really our conclusions. We exercise both the bottom-up and the top-down extension and abstraction and identify some interesting opportunities from that. So thank you all very much.
Is there a quick question?
Quentin Rowe from Walters Kluwer. You mentioned like the ODPs. Where did you find them? Is that something that was part of the OOP website, or was it something that you determined yourself as being the correct patterns?
So we started with a couple of patterns. One was the event pattern, which had been presented at several of the Track A sessions on reuse, and so we wanted to pick that up and make use of that. Another one was a pattern from the FIBO standard on risk as being a product of probability and impact, and we used that as our kind of unifying factors for how to approach risk in general. And then trajectory itself is effectively an ODP. That was recommended by one of the members of the group who'd worked on it, Mike Dean. So he brought that to the table. That extends the event pattern and creates its own patterns. Yeah, that was it really. We didn't really need to look for more patterns than that.
Mark Underwood, Krypton. Short question about the visualization tool that you used, pros and cons for having a visualization tool or not, and how to interoperate between that and the people who didn't have one.
It was very useful for getting everybody to get a clear picture of each other's ontologies so we could see where all the different patterns were. I would like to have had the same functionality in a more integrated environment where we could move stuff around. And, of course, because it wasn't a free tool, all the work that everybody did was actually in Protégé. So all we used the visualization tool for was to share the insights between the different team members as to what was in each other's ontologies. Does that answer your question?
Okay. Thank you, Mike. The next presentation is on an optimized Sparkle performance management system via a native API, presented by Victor Chernoff. Victor, are you there? Victor, are you there?
Hello.
Hi, Victor.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay.
We've got your slide loaded up, so please give your presentation and let me know when to move to the next slide.
Okay. Our project was named Optimized Sparkle Performance Management via Native API. Slide two, please. The problem, often it's hard to select a rather complex data structure by one Sparkle query, but at the same time, it's pretty simple to get all the data using combination of simple queries and then assemble the complex structure on the application level, on the client. This may require hundreds of calls to database, and that leads to using endpoint may be ineffective due to HTTP access overhead. In such cases, it is good to have an API access to the Triple Store that allows running queries directly bypassing HTTP. So the objective of our project was to find out how Triple Stores behave on a simple queries through the native API. Slide 3, please. So we have four participants on the event. So three of us were from Russia. Me and Vladislav Golovkov were sitting in the office, and Vladimir Salnikov from Russia, from Moscow, joined us. And Andrei Andreev from Sweden also joined us, and we have had three computers and run the experiments on those three. We selected three triple stores to play with. We chose the Universal Server, the Stardock, and Microsoft RDF Storage. So why we selected those triple stores? All three have a very high performance on SP2 bench benchmark. SP2 bench benchmark is the works on model of library, and it deals with books, magazines, articles, proceedings of conferences and authors, and many years of releases of those books and etc. And how the queries are made for SP2 bench? It's looks as similar to how ontology applications deal with ontologies. So, and those triple stores have Linux and Windows versions and native API for fast purposes. Slide 5, please. So we designed, we based on SP2 bench and designed advanced set of queries based on simple SP2 bench queries. SP2 bench has about 20 various queries, and most of them are complex, but some of them are simple. And we extended those simple queries to make the experimentation closer to ontology applications. So, slide 6, please. We've set up three computers. That's not something special. It's just general purpose computers, as you can see. Slide 7, please. We played with 25 million triple data set created by SP2 bench generation utility. On each run query was sent to server and the full result was read. It's done because some of the triple stores cache the data, and you cannot get a real picture of the performance if you don't do that way. Each query was run 10 times, query performance measured, and the median value has been taken as a result. Slide 8, please. So, as a result of experimentation, we got the following conclusions. For ontology applications, it is desirable to have direct access to database, not through HTTP protocol. Sometimes it is worth to simplify the queries as much as possible to make some processing on the client, which what is difficult to do with a single large query is easy to implement with a set of small ones. In those cases, Triple Store should be able to perform small queries quickly. Further performance gain up to 10 times of magnitude could be on the order of magnitude could be reached given users direct access to database bypassing Sparkle processing, just a direct API function. The myth that database, RDF databases are slow, I think that's that work not work more anymore, and RDF storages perform fast enough to compete with SQL databases. So actually, what we think, it is time to go through real applications using RDF table stores. So that's slide 9 shows the path to our report, and slide 10, that's all.
Okay, thank you very much, Victor. We have a question, Steve.
Great seeing you. I was most confused on 2 points that you raised. One was how you were saying that using the API instead of using HTTP confused me a little bit because the API presumably is still going over the Internet. And the second was you're talking about this on the current slide, how you're saying RDF database is slower than as well. You're talking about RDF, direct access to the RDF store without using Sparkle. And I'm wondering how you access an RDF triple store without using Sparkle. So I'm just wondering, I'm getting a little confused between HTTP, Sparkle, and Internet access, I guess. Can you elaborate on that?
So, actually, the first question is about, you say that when we go through API, we don't go through Internet. They go directly to functions of the triple store. Actually, HTTP protocol you need to deal with when you get through endpoint. That's unavoidable. But if you refuse an endpoint and you go directly to the server through API, that allows you to avoid HTTP protocol. Second query was, can you repeat the second query? Second question?
The second query was talking about you were saying how you were accessing the RDF triple store without using Sparkle. Is that what I understood you to say?
Okay. So Sparkle, Sparkle is just another layer that gets some overhead. So if you go directly to the functions, don't use Sparkle, but use the API to the server, to the triple store, you can get some performance gain.
Talking about bypassing the RDF layer like it's an underlying relational Oracle server or something? Is that what you're saying?
No. You go to the RDF, but using API functions, not using Sparkle. Directly to Triple.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, any other questions? Yeah, go ahead. State your name and...
Dave Blevins, Booz Allen Hamilton. I had 2 questions on the methodology. Why did you select the median rather than the mean to analyze the results? And do you think reading the entire result set would introduce data artifacts than if you simply ran the query and saw if the results were valid?
Okay. So, median, we thought that median gets more correct result when you get, when you have, say, a big amount of small values and, say, one big value. So, actually, it gets more correct median than just average. So, that we saw. And what is second question? Could you please repeat it?
Do you think reading the results, the entire results, would introduce data artifacts into your analysis?
It looks like I don't understand what you're asking.
Could you repeat that? Reading through all of the results could introduce errors in your data, as opposed to querying and having the query run without reading through all, you know, if you have 5 million results, reading all 5 million triples in addition to running the query.
Maybe you're asking about flight sale on each run, query was sent to server and full result was read. You mean that? It was done because some triples have a location, and actually without reading full results, you cannot get a real data. You cannot get a real information about the performance of the database. That's why.
Okay, thanks.
I guess you can ask through the ontology summit list and get a better answer.
Yeah, I think we need to kind of, we have three more talks here. And next talk is on OntoHub consolidation. I guess Jill is going to present this from remotely, or Oliver. Who's going to present that, Peter? But whoever is at your unmute, mute.
Till Osukowski or Oliver Kutz on the call? No.
6 o'clock in the evening, I guess, there.
Chat. Yeah, tell him he's not on the call.
Till? Can you unmute? Can you unmute Peter? Can you unmute him or no?
No, he's not.
He's not there.
He's not there.
Yeah.
Maybe he's having some difficulty getting onto the call.
Oliver,
ask him.
Shall we move to the next presentation and come back?
Right. Maybe we should come back.
Maybe we can send him a message and. Okay, the next one is Amanda. Are you presenting this? Or okay, let's go with it then. Well, if we tell Olivia doesn't come back, you have an early lunch. So. Colin, okay. Okay, he missed his chance.
Okay.
Very competitive world.
Okay. In the meantime, our hackathon was an attempt to stop talking about it and start doing something about it, start implementing something, to build a catalog of characteristics of ontologies and vocabularies that are relevant to the suitability of those ontologies and vocabularies for semantic web and big data applications. I'll say more about the motivation for that in a minute. Slide 2, our participants, the core team is myself, Andrea Westernan, back there, and Simon Spiro. We had a few drop-in observers. and a drop-in contributor. Anatoly and Dan both dropped in as in their capacity as the chairs of the hackathon in general. We were working in an area that Dan's very familiar with and had thoughts about, so he actually made some active suggestions and contributions that were most welcome. Now, what was the point of this? Sorry, this is slide 3 now, objectives. Something we kind of knew in general, but we heard specifically in the reuse track, in the bottlenecks track, and various scattered places. in figuring out what ontology or metadata vocabulary or other artifacts you might want to use, or whether you want to use a specific one, it's important to not only understand your own requirements, but also to be able to find out what are the specific characteristics of those potential candidate vocabularies and ontologies. But there isn't an existing standard way to describe that. There's some metadata available at a very high level on these objects in various repositories, but it's not at this granular level, and it's not particularly standardized. So what we wanted to do is get a move on, get this catalog started, make it open source, collaboratively developed, extensible, publicly available, all the things that could make it a sustainable, growing thing beyond what we could get done in a weekend with three people. And importantly, our envisioned uses were fairly wide-ranging. So we imagined people using this catalog to manually create metadata for vocabularies and ontologies they're publishing to help other people use them. We imagined evaluation tools and methodologies representing the outputs using this vocabulary. And we imagined repositories using this vocabulary to provide metadata on the artifacts in those repositories. And to generally to try to take a bite out of this problem, right, of useful description that can help with reuse and with the bottlenecks around reuse. So what did we actually do? Well, we kicked it off, gave it a name. It's the Vocabulary and Ontology Characteristics Relevant to Evaluation of Fitness, or VOCREF. Not entirely, it's not the catchiest, sexiest thing in the world, but it's tolerable and not terribly loaded in such a way that it's going to instantly alienate any of our intended communities, so we're going with it. We created a GitHub repository. The link isn't actually a link in the slide, unfortunately. I don't remember why I did that or how I did that, but it's up there on GitHub. It's at GitHub/VOCREF, you'll find it, and it is expected to stay there. And any current and future contributors are welcome to fork that repository, work on it freely, and submit extensions, fixes, additions as pull requests to initiate integration into the main vocabulary. We decided to work in AL2. Not because it's anybody's favorite language, but because it is the most widely adopted. It's the thing that any of the repositories or tools that we were thinking of would probably be able to use. and so, whatever the pros and cons of it, we said, okay, we'll start there. We'll go with that. Simon saved us from a lot of pain by pointing out to me when I had first got the repository stood up that the OWL functional syntax works a lot better with version control than any other serialization. So we declared that our official stored mode. And we wrangled some modularity considerations into an initial architecture, which I'll describe in a few slides. So what did we actually do during that time, during the weekend continued? Most of our work on Hackathon Day focused on our top-level module, which is the one that should contain the most basic concepts related to ontologies and their evaluation with respect to these potential application areas. This is one of those moments where a lot of people want to point to a number and say, we grew this by this many concepts. We shrunk this by this many concepts, right? I had initially imported a lot of concepts from the output of last year's ontology evaluation hackathon, and a lot of it came back out. Why? Because it wasn't relevant to this year's particular focus, right, on what matters for semantic web and big data application reuse, or because it wasn't specifically clear enough, or it may be something a lot of people evaluate. It's not obvious that it's relevant to usefulness in any way. Those are some of the examples of things we pulled out, or some of it was redundant with something else. Anyway, we did add stuff as well, but we got a lot of weeding done. And we got a couple of initial content modules, one looking at some characteristics specifically having to do with lexicalization and whether an artifact is suitable for use in NLP. another, and now I'm forgetting what the other content module was that got started. Doesn't matter now. So we got some modules going, initially populated. We also gathered a whole bunch of stuff to consider for inclusion, right? So there's a section in the repository for references and resources. There are candidate ontologies for reuse in there, right? You can imagine what some of those are. I may have a list on another slide. And we started going through some of those. We also built up quite an issue store, and this is I want to emphasize the importance of this, particularly for what I consider good methodology in ontology development, but also for a collaborative open source project. We have identified, currently, as of right now, there are 47 issues in that issue store. 30 of them were closed by this time, so that means we addressed them. 17 are still open. They are important because identification of an issue is a requirement specification, right? It's something that needs to happen or needs to go into this or needs to be fixed in this, right? And it's also a handle for discussion amongst the collaborators. You know, do we want to include this particular thing, or I'm confused about what this means, allowing the collaboration point, and it's also a mechanism for coordination collaboration. So people can come in, and anyone can add an issue to the store. Right? If they say, well, for me, this particular characteristic is important, and I don't see it here, I can open an issue on it. And anybody can come in and assign themselves an issue and say, I'm going to try and fix this or build this part in. And because they've assigned it to themselves, other people will know it's being worked on by somebody, or by them specifically. We also put milestones on some of those issues. One of the ones that we wanted to complete during the hackathon remains incomplete, and that one is adding sufficient annotation to the concepts that were reused from last year's hackathon. That's assigned to me. It's still open. Oh, sorry. Okay. We had, as Mike mentioned with his hackathon, we had some issues with having a tooling that's both robust to the things we needed to do and enables simultaneous visibility. Don't have that. We had Google Hangout instead. We simultaneously coordinated our work through that. Specific things about our approach that are worth noting, we were focusing on the specific characteristics that we have reason to believe are relevant to the suitability for applications in semantic web and big data, not just any old thing anybody evaluates, especially if they've come up during this. We were looking to reuse existing treatments, whether they're on an ontology form or a paper or a specification, and leaving out things that didn't meet those criteria. Some things some lessons, things that are not as useful as one might think, but there's a lot of material about them. We pretty much set aside for the purposes of the hackathon consideration of the overall type of object something was. Is it an ontology or vocabulary? That's not actually particularly useful when you're looking to whether you use it partially because those are not standardized classifications. It doesn't give you much granular information about what this thing does, right? It's different in a case where that's a standardized thing. So if you say, oh, well, we did add vocabulary to say this meets a standard, right? So if it is an ANSI NISO Z39 point something or other controlled vocabulary, that's informative, right? Otherwise, you get a lot of heat and not a lot of light. Instead, we're looking at, does it support reasoning of this type? Does it have a lexicon in this language? Does it, et cetera, et cetera? That's the level of information you need. And I'll leave the rest of that for you to read since I'm over time. Very quick point on modules. We had as a goal to both have small modules to enable people to grab just pieces that they wanted, and also the ability to link to existing things and grab the whole thing if you want. We ended up basically with a spindle architecture, so we have different content modules, the very, very, the most general, more specific ones people might not need for a particular use, and externally mapping between those and external vocabulary. So, and then lower level gathering or integration modules, so you can get just all the native content with all the mappings. You know, one grab and go module that imports everything. So you don't need to worry about it if you don't want to. And slide 11, what's in the repository right now, references and resources, starting start at the test and evaluation resources, like capability questions and so forth, the modules that I mentioned, and the issue store, and it will continue. We think we got a good start. It's solid enough that maybe with a little more documentation to introduce it, you know, maybe including throwing this up there, so that newcomers can orient well when they get to it. It's ready for other people to start contributing, and we hope that people will.
Okay. Thank you, Amanda. I don't think we have time for questions. So we've got to move to the next talk here. A little behind, but that's okay at this stage, I guess, 5 minutes. Pardon? Still, yeah. Still there?
Yeah, he's still. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Still, your slides are up. You are on slide one now.
Okay. So that's about hackathon project OntoHub consolidation. Let's go to slide two. OntoHub is a web-based repository engine for ontologies being distributed and also written in multi-languages like OWL, Common Logic, RDF, more complicated logics as well, first order, higher order. There's a prototype available at ontohub.org. And we have the goal to follow the open ontology repository architecture and API. We have some mirrors currently of some important repositories like BioPortal, Tones, Colora, and SOCOP, or there's a typo set, sorry. And as OntoHub has also been used as a repository for the FOIS competition, and it will be used as the central tool for the forthcoming OMG standard ontology integration and interoperability onto IO. And we recently have added the Git integration as a central new feature. So Git is a decentralized repository, which is now used by many software projects. And there is GitHub, which is really fastly growing and many people are using it. and you can easily fork projects there and so on. And so OntoHub is basically the name is also, and also the design, a bit inspired by GitHub. And so you have Git versioning there in this ontology repository, and you can also use any Git client for maintaining your ontologies. And this integration of Git caused a lot of problems, and therefore we needed a consolidation phase. So that's why this topic of the hackathon is just consolidation and not some exciting new feature. The results of the hackathons, so that's now on slide three. There have been 10 participants. 9 have met locally in Bremen in Germany. 1 was from Toronto, remotely connected, and he was new to OntoHub and wanted to write a new deployment script. So that was great that we could also get some new people involved. And we actually have managed to close an important milestone, voice competition, which has been open for months and has had many complications. There was one severe bug concerning a complicated database transaction, and we actually managed, because we had all the people together for one day, we managed to find that bug and eliminate it, and yeah, lots of other stuff. And so this was really an important milestone to close this voice competition milestone. And you have some links here at slide 3. And so just to give an idea what OntoHub is, on slide 4, there's a screenshot. So you see that OntoHub is structured in different Git repositories. And we have the BioPortal clone there. We have Coloro there. We have Concept Portal. There are other things. And each of these is in own Git repository and can be maintained kind of separately. Slide 5, here you see the file browser view for a specific repository, in this case BioPortal. You see on the left-hand side, the left column contains the file names, and the right column contains the ontologies, the ontology names. So we differentiate between a file and the associated ontology. There might be also files not providing ontology, and there might be files containing multiple ontologies. Therefore, we have this differentiation. And you can also see on slide 6 that there may be folders, and so you can also organize your files hierarchically in the repository. But that's basically all known from GitHub, so that you can browse your repositories. Slide 7, now that shows you if you go into some ontology, this is now an OWL. There you can have, as usual, the class tree, and then you can also browse object properties and other stuff. So you have different symbols there. But the important thing is that this view now also works for example, for common logic theories or for other first-order theories. So it's not bound to OWL. Slide 8, here we have a history of a repository. Here you see the commits and the Git commits, and then you can view Git diffs between different versions and jump onto different versions. That's also possible. Then slide 9, here you see again the file browser now with a CLIP file, Common Logic, so it's not OWL, it's Common Logic, and we have the integrated code mirror, and this also was completed only with the voice milestone, so that's also a result of the hackathon that this now works. You can click on an edit button, and then you have a web-based editor, and then you can edit this. Syntax highlighting has yet to come, but then you can write a commit message and press the commit button, and then you automatically generate a commit in the Git repository. So if you can use Git without having any Git clients, using the web-based interface. Slide 10 shows some metadata. So we have different kinds of metadata for the ontologies. And here you see a category tree. It's similar to what you have in BioPortal, but BioPortal is very restricted to biological and medical ontology, so we have developed a more general taxonomy, which is also maintained as an owl ontology. And here you see the different ontologies in the different fields of the taxonomy. You can also click on the pluses to get a more fine-grained view, and we still have to classify many of the ontologies, so the classification is not complete. Okay, I think that was it. Thanks for your attention.
Okay, thank you. We have plenty of time for questions here. Steve, you had a question?
No.
Well, you can voice it your time.
Steve Ray, CMU. I was just noticing you have this edit, and I was sort of wondering what the implications of editing a repository file was. And I guess it's a mirror. I mean, was there controls over who can edit what, things like that?
Good question.
Yeah, indeed, good question. So currently you can only edit if you have the rights. So there's also right management per repository, not per ontology. In the future, we plan that you can also edit if you don't have the rights, and then if you commit, there will be automatically a new Git branch created, and then you can later on, the maintainer of the repository can decide whether he wants to merge the branch or not.
And then we have Michael. A chat question, and then Michael, I said.
Christoph.
Okay. Hello, this is Christoph Lange. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. So a question on slide 7, you said, if I got it right, that this class hierarchy view also works for languages other than OWL. If I got this right, how would it work for Common Logic?
No, sorry. The view with the different kinds of symbols. So in Common Logic, instead of classes and object properties, you would have names and sequence markers. Although we also think of extracting class hierarchies from other languages, like Castle, there you have the subsort hierarchy. We also want to include QML class diagrams. And we have, for the time being, integrated MOF, the meta object facility, which is similar to class diagrams. And there you would have the class hierarchy, so you would have a similar view there.
Thank you.
Yeah, Michael, go ahead.
Michael Eschild, Semantic Arts. So it says it's a beta, and I see lots of things in it. So my question is, how mature is this? If I decide to start using it, is it just going to work just fine? I mean, like any decent piece of software, although there's always going to be nice things about it. Or is it pretty early days, and I'm going to have to struggle along because there's lots of things that aren't really working yet?
So you see at the screenshots beta quality, OntoHub beta. So I would guess it's not ready for productive use yet, but we want to have it ready soon, say by the end of this year. You could use it productively, roughly estimate. The nice thing is that you have a Git repository below. So for Git, you have very mature tools, and you always have, even if everything else fails, you always will have the Git level. You can always maintain your repositories, even if the OntoHub server should be down for some reason. But of course, we want to reach maturity also for everything in OntoHub, and roughly estimated end of the year.
Thanks. It looked, for the most part, pretty good. What would you say there are one or two things that really need to have a lot more work before it's ready for prime time?
Yeah, one is kind of stability. So we have still that some ontologies fail. So they basically are analyzed, but are not really, there are errors. Sometimes in BioPortal, some imported ontologies do not exist, so there are all kinds of nasty problems there, and it's not always easy to tell, because we integrate several tools, who is responsible for that, or it's the fault of the ontology. So that's one problem. Another problem is the smoothness of the user interface would be also improved.
Thank you. Yeah, I think we have two questions here. Peter M., and then we'll take
it. Till, if I put in an OWL ontology, can I get a common logic ontology out and vice versa? Or when? If not, I mean, if not now, when?
Yes.
What?
Yeah, you say.
Is that yes? Did you say yes?
Lost him?
Till?
Sorry, there was a problem in the connection. So you can translate OWL to common logic. There is a translation. And you can even, in the distributed ontology language, you can write down some ontology where you take your OWL ontology and write just the OWL ontology and then with logic translation and then your mapping from OWL to common logic, and then you get a common logic ontology. So that's possible. Vice versa, it's not possible yet. We also plan to have that to project ontologies, but it's more complicated how to do this.
Thank you.
Okay, last question.
I have two questions.
Yeah, please state your name for Rafa.
Yes, Stefan Feder from Image Matters. I think this tool is a great tool. I really feel a niche that's really needed. I've published a bunch of geospatial ontology for OGC, and I'm looking for a place where people can contribute and feedback on this ontology and make change. So I have two questions. First, what's the programming language that this website is built on? And my second question is, how versioning of ontology are managed? I'm not talking about Git. I mean, text-based versioning, but more conceptual and change of property at a conceptual level.
Yeah, good question. So the programming language is Ruby on Rails, but we also interface with other tools like the OWL API written in Java and the heterogeneous tool set for logic translations written in Haskell, but the main framework is Ruby on Rails. Seeing the second question, so you can take versions, but that's all. We don't have a conceptual versioning yet. We just have the Git versioning. That's an interesting point. We should have a conceptual discussion about this.
Okay. Thank you, Till. I think we need to pass on to the next speaker. It's going to be Ken remotely speaking, I guess. Ken, are you there? Is Ken on the chat? Or,
Hello, is it? Can you hear me?
Ken?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. You're on slide number one.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about the semantic annotation of the Ontolog Community Environment Hackathon. If you go to slide number two, the background of this is that as you know, the Ontolog Collaborative Work Environment, of which its wiki is a very important part, has always served this community. And it's been been many years, actually. We've been involved, many people have been involved in attempting to ontologize, you know, basically to annotate and to use wiki content because it's such a rich source of information and knowledge about ontologies for our community. So this is actually this hackathon is really just one of a long series of efforts in this direction, and we expect that it will continue in the future. So we just have a number of goals that we hope eventually will be achieved, and in fact we've made a lot of progress toward them. On slide three, the specific goals of the hackathon were to try to extract the semantic content from the pages, specific pages on the Ontolog Wiki, the ones involving conference meetings, and to extract calendar type information from them. But we wanted the code to be general enough that we could then extend it to get other kinds of semantic content from these pages. The idea is that this would be kind of, it ends up being the kickoff for the development of an entire semantic ecosystem based on the Purple Semantic Media Wiki. So going to slide 4, the Ontolog community environment is going to be on the Purple Semantic Media Wiki platform. It is the content that is currently on the website is being migrated, and we are going to be semantically annotating it. So we have some categorization already. The hackathon was mostly concerned with extracting properties such as date, starting time, duration, chairs, speakers, participants, and so on. Going to slide 5, now this will show you what a typical page looks like on the current Ontolog Wiki. It's one of the sessions of the Ontology Summit this year. And so you can see there is a great deal of interesting semantic content there. Now, if you go to page slide 6, this shows at least the beginning of what the actual page looks like underlying that view on slide 5. So the wiki actually takes this kind of text that you're looking at on slide 6 and converts it into the HTML page that you see on slide 5. So, but this is, of course, just the first part of that page. Now, the next slide, slide 7, shows what a typical page, or this is actually a small version of one page in the new Purple Semantic Media Wiki. So it's not the actual page, it's just a mock-up of one with a little bit of content so that I can show you what's going on. It was some of the information from Track D, Session 1. Now, if you go to slide 8, now on slide 8 you can see what the page source looks like with annotations. Now, the first Ontology Summit to them, that's just an ordinary link. The semantic annotations are the properties of the page and the categories of the page. So we have the two champions and the three speakers that were at this session. And then the last items on that slide are the categorization of that page. So we're saying that this page is in the meeting class and it's in the Ontology Summit 2014 class. So basically specifying this page as a resource, it's an instance of these two classes, and it has a number of properties. So I think you can recognize this as semantic annotation. Notice that in addition to annotating it for semantic purposes, these also show up on the page. So if you go back to slide 7, you'll see that those links, you see the links there. You don't see that it's being marked as a property, but they do show up as links to those individuals, their personal pages. And this last category here actually determines the look and feel or skin of the wiki page. So because it's in this category, you then see on slide 7 that banner up at the top and the particular look and feel of the rest of the page. If you go to slide 9, now this is another page, and what's interesting here is that it is extracting content, semantic content, from other pages, specifically from that page we just saw, where it lists the champion and the speakers. And, of course, if there were other pages in this category, meeting pages in this category, you could also extract those that information and show it. So it's dynamic content that just gets generated whenever you look at that page. So on slide 11, I show what we hope to achieve. What we hope to do is take the content that I showed before, current page, and then annotate it as is shown below. So the date, for example, will now be specified as has date. Categories will be specified for that page. If you look at the next line, it says show. So it's actually going to be querying another page and showing the theme of the overall summit. So you'll only have the theme in one place. The session topic will be specified as a property, and the chairs will also be properties. Panelists will be indicated, and so on. So you can see the kinds of annotations that we hope to have on these pages. So now going to slide 12. Sorry, I kind of got lost there. The semantics of Semantic Media Wiki are not that rich. They're resources. The resources are the whole wiki pages. We have categories that we can use for classification. There is a subcategory hierarchy, and properties are supported, data type properties, object properties, each with its own wiki page. And software has been developed for mapping from RDF to Semantic Media Wiki. Slide 13, the hackathon software was developed. We did have some difficulty with authentication, but we did manage to get things parsed and updated, and also to use the Google Calendar web service. Going to slide 14, here are the participants that were at the hackathon. It appears that the font was messed up. I'll try to fix that. We had six students working, as well as myself, Peter, and Tejas Parikh, each of whom had a duty to develop software for the hackathon. The current status on slide 15 is that we have developed a prototype, a few problems, although we've managed to fix them. And the students are still active, and they intend to continue working on it until during the rest of the summer, actually. They couldn't continue immediately after the hackathon because they had to finish their semester. Slide 16 now. This is what we intend to finish by the end of the summer, is an integrated